Welcome to Drink Beer, Think Beer, the podcast that gets to the bottom of every pint. I'm John Hall. Jack Hendler and Joe Connolly of Jack's Abbey Craft Lagers have a new book out. It's currently available on shelves, and it's called Modern Lager: Techniques, Processes, and Recipes. It's from Brewers Publication, and they're going to be here to discuss what's in its pages. But first, please go visit allaboutbeer.com. There, you can find original articles, reviews, news, insights, and podcasts. Listen to shows like Brewer to Brewer and the All About Beer podcast simply by searching All About Beer wherever you listen to shows. And don't forget, you can follow All About Beer on Instagram, Threads, X, and Facebook at All About Beer. To keep up with all of the smoked beer news and releases, check out This Week in Rauk Beer by searching the group on Facebook or following at TW Rauk Beer on X, Threads, and Instagram. There is also some limited edition This Week in Rauk Beer merchandise that you can find on allaboutbeer.com/merch. This show and all of the work we do, it's supported by you. You can go visit patreon.com/allaboutbeer. A few bucks goes a long way to help keep the content fresh and to fund writers, photographers, creators, and editors. Really, thank you for your support. And if you'd like to learn more about advertising on this show or any of our shows or on the website, you can email us at info@allaboutbeer.com. Lager continues to have its moment. The world's most popular beer style and a source of pride and appreciation by brewers and drinkers, there's no denying the deliciousness and the power of lager. There's so much history about lager out in the world, but as the landscape changes and more craft brewers take up the practice, Hendler and Connolly of Massachusetts Jack's Abbey Brewing explore all that is happening in the space today and take a look at some of the more obscure traditions and practices. Hendler, who is no stranger to this show, is the founder and co-owner of Jack's Abbey Craft Lagers. Following years of hands-on experience and a degree in brewing from the Siebel Institute and the Domans Academy, Jack opened Jack's Abbey in 2011 with his brothers Eric and Sam. The lager-only brewery has since grown to be one of the Commonwealth's largest breweries and remains family-owned and operated. And Connolly is the sales director at Jack's Abbey. Since joining the beverage industry in 2007, he has developed a passion for beer education and its importance to brewing. As a founding team member of the brewery, he has helped define its brand and establish its core values of community, education, experimentation, and fun. He's a Boston University graduate, and he combined his passion for writing, travel, and beer production to co-author Modern Lager Beer. They join me from the brewery, and here's our conversation. Well, guys, welcome to the show. Thanks for doing this, and congratulations on the book, which is now out and available for sale. If people did not pre-order it, they're going to have to wait until the end of this month, end of April, to get their hands on it. Tell me how did the idea for this book and how did the process start to from start to finish of how modern lager came to be?
I think this book was your idea, Jack. You should talk about how the idea came to you.
Sure. So probably about 5 years ago, I have this recollection of having this question that was very specific about lager. And I have so many books on my shelf, but it was nearly impossible to find the answer that I was looking for. And I'm like, why doesn't this information exist? It was not an unusual question. And I thought there had to be a better place to get this information. And so,
do you remember the question?
What's that?
Do you remember the question?
It was some sort of yeast fermentation question that I don't remember the exact question, but I remember it being something that should have been very clear and obvious. And it should have been easy to find this information. But there's so little information about lager yeast in homebrewing books or in many even textbooks. And I was really curious why there wasn't a better source of information for people who really just wanted to talk about lager. There's some great textbooks that talk about yeast in general, but they're not necessarily specific about how lager yeast works. And that was sort of surprising to me. Now, there may be that in German. We haven't found it. But I at that time really wanted to dive into this idea of how can we have a better access to information for people who are talking about lager. You think about how people get into brewing beer in the US, the vast majority of brewers in the US come through home brewing. And in home brewing, most brewers are not brewing lager. So there's this disconnect of education and training for people getting to the craft beer world that I think there's a gap there. In Germany and Czech Republic, they only know the lager side. They only learn that information. And so there's this like very interesting divergence of ideas between the brewers here in the US and those in Europe. And I really wanted to, I really wanted to bring those ideas together and see what it could look like. And COVID happened. And I was like, you know what? I actually might have time to work on this. And I believe in some point in the spring of 2020, I was like, I'm going to write a book. And I was a history major, so I never thought history was ever going to be applicable to my professional life. But as it turned out, all the research and writing that I did back in college ended up being slightly useful. As soon as this project became real, I realized that I really needed someone to write with me. Joe and I both have full-time jobs, so finding time to actually do this was quite challenging. And so it was great to work with Joe, who gave a very different perspective than me and was able to sort of digest some of my very research and technical information and make it a little bit more understandable and approachable make this book more widely available.
What's a good example of that? I mean, like, Joe, what do you feel like you brought to this to compliment Jack?
Well, I mean, I guess my introduction to beer was, as like Jack says, through home brewing and through talking to people. Like anybody who would walk into my store 20 years ago would get a little spiel about a craft beer, and I'd started to like build up enough technical information, build up enough, time being like physically in breweries that I could like speak to somebody who's maybe not as technically minded as someone like Jack is, and kind of try to tell a story of why something's important. And, you know, I think I did that to some extent with a lot of the technical information that we present in the book. And then we also tried to take like, I don't know, little vignettes of the world of lager beer. I think it's, another thing that was maybe missing is this kind of this compendium of like, here's what is important. And, you know, from a cultural perspective, from a human interest perspective about traditional lager beer production, both like now in the US, now in the Czech Republic and Germany, and like present little flashes of that in the book and get some of the people behind it, that I thought was a really fun way to kind of round out the technical information and make it so it isn't just a textbook, I guess.
So what's sort of interesting and hearing the two of you talk about it in this way, right, especially from the homebrewing background, right? I know that there's been homebrewers for a while who have been making lagers, but by and large in the U.S., ales fueled this revolution of where we are with beer right now. Still remain popular in the craft space, you know, through IPA. And lagers had become that, you know, mass market, behemoth kind of thing, even though there were small, you know, German producers, and even in the US, some smaller producers and everything. But I'm wondering if that's kind of one of the reasons why there wasn't as much information out there, is because the people who were doing it, these were trade secrets, or these were, you know, corporate logs as opposed to hobbyist logs. Is that accurate?
That's interesting. I know that one of the things that we found that is a lot of the resources you can find about producing traditional lager beer are written with the industrial large scale lager brewer in mind, and not somebody who's doing it even like commercially on a smaller craft scale. So I think there's an element of that that's true. And I do think that the idea that like most of us come to craft beer through like an aversion to lager beer, as in like we tasted beer flavored beer. We said, enough of that. I want to find something more interesting and compelling. You open the world of ales up. You get into traditional beer production and like the human interest of craft beer that way. And you almost inadvertently say, well, that was, you know, ales are full of flavor. Lager was that boring stuff from before. When the reality is there's this whole subtle world of like really interesting beers that are, yeah, they're more subtle. They may demand more of your attention to see what's so different about them and what it can be so compelling about them. But at the same time, you know, they are rewarding in that way. And I don't know. I think that there's also something about the way that some of the biggest breweries in the world have communicated lager beer and had talk about their beer within the realm of tradition that is also confusing for consumers. And, you know, I don't think that helps the quote unquote brand of lager beer on its own. And so I think that definitely like hides some of the information for sure.
Yeah. I think when you guys first opened, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think on the other side, when you talk about, I think there's this misconception that Czech, German, European brewers are unwilling to share how they produce beer. And that's from our experience, just completely untrue. And I think there's just maybe a language barrier or maybe just a misunderstanding of how we brew. When you come with the American brewing perspective to Germany, you could be confused. You may not understand what's going on. And being able to talk with the same language and the same ideas can be challenging. So I think that in the past, people may have felt that they couldn't get the information, but I think that that was just a barrier on communication that needed to be overcome. And we found a lot of the brewers willing to give us the exact details of every recipe and talk about every process they were doing and had no problem sharing any information. And we rarely, when we were there, had anyone get touchy about telling us what would be considered like, you know, private or secret information.
That's cool. That's really heartening to hear. I like that. When you all started, Jack, I know you had that history background. You have that respect for lager. You were making, you know, lagers to style with a lot of, you know, tradition in mind. And then, you know, there's been, you've really been branching out over the last, you know, 10 or so years, right? Where's the balance for you as a brewer between, I guess, what we're calling modern lagers and the history for which you're so steeped in?
Yeah, you know, I think that was the interesting thing as well when we talked to all these brewers, like what is your vision? What's your philosophy? And when you think about when Jack's Abbey opened, craft lager was still not yet a thing. There obviously was craft lager then, but for us, it was just so important to make lager more than just golden lager. And we still to this day sort of brew lager for lager's sake for the sole purpose of saying, you have to reconsider your idea about lager, and we're going to be that brewery that is willing to push the boundaries so that we can take lager out of this very narrow niche that the world has put it in. And while we still focus very much on traditional styles of lager, our best-selling beer is house lager, roughly a Helles or land beer. Our second best-selling beer is a German-style Pilsner, and on, we still feel it's really important as a brewery to help to define lager in the craft sense and to push the boundaries on what lager can be so that we can help to educate the drinking public and help them to reconsider maybe some of their misconceptions about lager.
I like that. What do you feel like is one of the larger misconceptions that have been out there, and how do you guys address that in the book?
Mm. I'm not sure we'll answer this question the same way. See, so, I guess I would give you my perspective of it. Like, one of the misconceptions is that, traditional is always right, or that traditional means better. Actually, when the BA announced the book, they just announced the title of it with it on an Instagram square, and someone who was like, "Modern Lagerbeer, we don't need any shortcuts. Like, the traditional way is always going to be best." And I, like, this is my first involvement in something like this. I got involved in the comments, and I was like, "Hey, it's not what this book is about." Like, we're not trying to say it's not that for some reason modern or quicker is going to be better, but it's also not a binary. Traditional is also not better. It's in, like, necessarily on its own. Like, in tradition by itself doesn't mean a lot when you're talking about a beverage that's created with materials that are grown in a modern world. Unless you're somehow getting barley from 40, 50 years ago, you should be treating it differently. And so this is something that maybe more that I learned, and like this idea, and like going back to what I said about like how tradition is used as kind of a cudgel by bigger breweries to like speak to why X or Y is better. I think it's interesting to unpack what those individual traditions mean and can mean in a beer, and to see how people match those techniques to the vision of what they're trying to produce. I'm not sure. Yeah, I would say that's like a really like rough idea, a rough answer to your question, but like the idea of tradition is always being like preferred. I think that's something definitely I learned from working on this book with Jack, so, certainly.
Jack, what's your thought, or does that jive with Joe?
Yeah, I would say from a slightly different perspective, I always go back to when the brewery opened. So, it's not that long ago, but 13 years ago, we had this tiny tap room. We couldn't sell pints of beer. We can only give away 2 ounce samples. And this was not necessarily before the internet, but people didn't actually know much about the brewery when they came. So they walk into our brewery and we're like, "Hi, we're Jack's Abbey. We only sell lagers." And half of the people who walked in the door nearly just walked right out the door immediately without even bothering to try a beer. And we had to like cajole them. "It's free beer. What's the worst that could happen? Why don't you try it?" And there was just this perception that lager was low quality, that lager was yellow fizzy beer. This idea that if you are a craft beer consumer, you shouldn't be bothering with it. And it took a lot of time until we could persuade people that maybe they should be rethinking their misconceptions about what lager is. And, free beer does help with that messaging, I suppose.
Sure.
But all those people who came in say they don't like lagers, I feel the vast majority left saying, "That was actually a pretty good experience, and I might look out for one of these beers again." So it's definitely this stranglehold of macro light lager that sort of defined what lager is for at least a generation, if not longer. And it's sort of our opportunity now to reset that and to explain what lager is and why it's important.
So, oh, sorry, Joe, did you want to jump in?
No, sorry.
Okay. One of the things where I think tradition, and this is maybe it's just me, I'm not necessarily a purist or anything, but how important is fermentation time? How important is the lagering process, even with quote unquote modern lagers? I feel like that's a loaded question, but
Oh,
I'm
I think that's fair. I mean, that's sort of like what we're trying to get at with this book.
Yeah.
And I think from like the beginning here, the book says modern lager beer, and I think the first battle we have is just explaining what modern lager beer is. This is, again, as Joe sort of said in his Instagram interaction with a potential, maybe not potential,
Not a reader, not yet.
potential reader, is that We're not defining modern lager as the cheapest, most efficient way of brewing beer. It's using all the information we have about lager for hundreds of years to produce the beer today. So you may be decocting, you may be making lager that's 4 months, 4 months old. You may be spunding or croisening or doing all these really traditional things. But in the end, you're brewing it in 2024 and you're creating a modern beer. And we want to give lager brewers every single avenue available to them so that they can make decisions for themselves that make the best beer for them. Now, if you want to talk about traditional lager or more traditional lagering techniques, it still takes a long time. You cannot make a traditional tasting lager beer in 2 weeks. Can you make a great tasting lager beer in 2 weeks? Arguably. Certainly we're not proponents of that. If you read our book,
I was gonna say who's making that argument.
We are certainly biased towards more traditional styles of brewing lager, and we try to explain how even in a modern brewery you can do these things, but it would be unfair to say that's the only way or that there aren't other philosophies involved. And I think you can only make the right decisions if you know all the available avenues to you. We try to at least give those perspectives, even if our bias can be very clearly seen in how we write about them.
I feel like, though, that this is where something like, it's not even a bias, it's just, it is tradition and it's history and it is a matter of taste, right? I mean, there are a lot of these. Maybe not a lot, but I'll always try to order a lager when I go into a brewery just to kind of see what it's tasting like. And when I hear like, oh yeah, it was in the tank for 3 weeks, it's like, it's okay, but it doesn't have that soul. It doesn't have that, you know, that depth that I think most of us are looking for, you know, with it. And so, you know, you all making the case for, you know, actual proper lagering times, I hope that lands with folks.
I would actually add to that for some color, I guess. Like, we went to I'm not going to say the brewery, but we went to a brewery that was talked up ahead of time as in Germany as like, oh, this is like the place. Everybody loves the beer from this place. We went there. I don't know. It must have been like late August or something like that. Had the beer, thought it was okay. Jack went back a little bit later. When he came back, he's like, you know, we went at the wrong time. He's like, the locals are talking about how their lagering time dropped in summer. So that beer we had was like way quicker turn. And excuse me, then once you would get quote unquote off season when the pressure is not as high on them to get to pump beer at. And we went back later and like, yeah, the beer was like way better. Like later in the season when the beer had been around a bit longer and was like, okay, I get the reputation now. So that's like some empirical evidence too. Like, I mean, obviously this is somewhat, this is like local gossip more than it is anything else, but like, the difference in quality was definitely there.
I like that. Yeah, it's, what's an ideal time, I guess? Does it depend on the recipe? Does it depend on the brewery? Or I guess what's an ideal minimum time of lagering in your mind, Jack?
So we basically break this down into three ways of brewing, fermenting, and lagering. So, you know, if you're going to do the industrial warm pressure fermentation, you could probably put a beer out 1 to 3 weeks. If you're going to do sort of the more modern, what we call the hybrid, where you ferment cold, but you allow the beer to warm up so you can remove diacetyl and other off flavors quicker. Generally, these beers can be produced in 3 to 5 weeks. And if you're going to do very traditional fermentations, you're probably looking at a minimum of 5 weeks to be able to produce that beer. Now, you know, there's no purpose of fermenting a beer warm and then lagering it for 5 weeks. You've just done everything wrong here. You have impaired the fermentation to the lagering. So you know, for each action, there's a subsequent action that needs to be taken. And, you know, there's a reason for the long times. If you are fermenting your beer really cold, there's a lot of things that need to, you create a lot of bad flavors. I mean, lager smells and tastes really bad when it's fermenting. And if you're fermenting it really warm, you can remove all those off flavors really quickly. If you are fermenting it cold, it's going to take a long time. So, you know, if you ferment at, we'll call it 48, 50 degrees, and you're doing a cold secondary lagering, you know, it could take 3-4 weeks just to pass VDK or diacetyl rest. And then you got to cool the beer down and crash it. So that 5 weeks can actually be pretty short depending on how you're fermenting. But again, there's ways to shorten that process, and each change has some pros and some cons. There's not everything bad about fermenting fast. There's some real positives. I mean, who doesn't like a light lager every once in a while? And, yeah, you know, those beers are best fermented pretty darn quick. You probably make a better light lager in 2 to 3 weeks than you would make giving it 5 weeks to lager. So, you know, there's that balance for every single style that needs to be considered to make sure that you're producing the right outcome.
One of the things that I've been enjoying with this sort of renewed, it's not even renewed interest, but with more brewers experimenting with lagers, putting in the time, thinking about them, and then putting out interesting recipes, are the lagers that folks are aging in wood, be it fooders, be it barrels, you know, whatever. But what wood can do, a little bit of wood aging can do to a lager to add that additional depth. And you guys get into this in the book a little bit, which I really enjoyed. But should more brewers be thinking about wood and lager? Should more drinkers be thinking about wood and lager? Or is this something that's kind of on the periphery of things?
Well, I like that it pulls people back to lager's kind of origins in a way, like to a more rustic pre-industrial time. I think that its interaction often creates a product that has like a bit of a more rustic, like rougher edges quality to it that I like. And I think that anything that can like challenge the perception of lager as being only pale, dry, and like insignificant on the palate is compelling to me as a drinker and as somebody thinks about it. Like, I think wood interactions are like totally fascinating when it comes to how they interact with beer. Even from like, you know, we've talked to some folks about pitch lining wooden barrels and serving out of those barrels. So like not
necessarily. Chris Loring at Notch has been doing a lot of that.
Yeah. And like that flavor interaction of those, that serving style is very interesting. And I think that, you know, anytime someone's doing something thoughtful, inventive and like forward thinking at lager beer is should be celebrated.
Jack, what about you?
Yeah, I find the fooder aged lager thing really interesting because it's a new take on wood aging, not necessarily even the style of beer, but what you're trying to achieve out of the wood, where historically the wood character isn't necessarily all that important of a flavor characteristic. And sure, like you get do bourbon barrel aged dark beers, but that's not necessarily about the wood character so much. It's more like the bourbon and the burning, the char. And even when you're talking about fooders that were in use for sour beer, often the wood character was not intentional and it was frowned upon. So you wanted wood that was well-aged and didn't give a lot of flavor. It was there more as a place for microbes to live. But now brewers are looking at that just regular wood character and how it can interact with the beer. And in some ways, maybe lager is more appropriate for that, depending on the style of beer, because you have potentially a lighter flavor profile that might be able to enhance some of that wood character. But I do appreciate the creativity and finding new ways to use these vessels that brewers have been experimenting with now for many years on the craft beer side.
One of the other things that I dug about reading in the book and that I'm really sort of interested to see where it takes off is this whole land beer process, movement, category. I'm not quite sure how to fully qualify it, but can one of you give sort of a little background on that and sort of how that fits in with where we are with lagers today?
Oh, interesting. I think Jack, you should start it, because I think we used to call house lager like on the can a land beer. Like, we wanted to be more explicit about that. I don't think we do anymore. I don't think it's because we've changed the recipe greatly. I think we just were, we felt like maybe we were early to having that conversation with folks.
I think in order to create an identity for American lager, at least American craft lager, we need to be looking at the raw materials that are available to us and looking for inspiration locally. And that's, you know, there's only so many brewers who can execute the next great Munich style Helles. And we know who those brewers are, but for the vast majority of brewers, you're only going to create a replica of the great beer. I think we have to find inspiration elsewhere. We can take inspiration from the process and the techniques that those beers are made from. But for every brewer here to just try to recreate a Munich Helles, that's not that interesting to me. If people can really dig deep and find something that's unique, but in the vein of something like a Munich Helles, I think that's great. We talked to Riggs Brewing in Illinois, who's growing their own specialty corn to make an American corn lager that has all the flavor and character of Illinois. It's just one of those beers that really inspired me. We talked to a bunch of other farm brewers who are growing a lot of their own ingredients. Now, I don't think a brewer has to grow their own ingredients in order to create their own land beer. There's plenty of craft maltsters. There's plenty of inspiration locally. But, it's something that's always been important to me as a brewer here in Framingham, is that every single beer that, even when we call them traditional, our beers aren't very traditional. Like, they're not gonna be direct replicas of the beers I buy in Germany. They're going to be inspired by them, but we need to be able to create our own flavor, our own profile, and define the beers as who we are versus as German brewers or Czech brewers.
Yeah, I think it was, I want to attribute it to Brett at Wild East, who is like, I could be a really great cover band. You know what I mean? Like, I could transport you to Prague in a glass. And maybe I can convince you for a second that you're there. But he's like, but that, to me, like, that's, I'm always going to be a cover band. I was like, when he feels like lager is interesting, kind of to what Jack is saying, is like, when you can do something that's uniquely of your place in a way. And like, is it New York grown ingredients for him? Is it Mass grown ingredients for us? Is it a fusion of technique and vision that makes it very interesting?
Yeah, when you travel the world, and I still remember one of my trips to Brazil, which was maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and they have a booming craft beer scene down there. But I was so surprised at how many brewers were brewing like New England IPA and sour beer. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. They're clearly taking inspiration from the U.S. craft beer scene. But what they were not doing was brewing American style lagers. I would love to, when I travel around the world, see brewers around the world taking inspiration from the styles of lager beer that brewers in the U.S. are brewing.
I like that. I also, and sort of the land beer thing for me is, you're talking about like, you know, Wild East and you know, corn and you know, like what everybody is doing for it. And it's sort of, I guess it probably fits in with the modern word, right? The modern landscape is all of these traditional styles of lager that we know, that we celebrate, that we appreciate, were new at some point, and then took off and got recognition and that reverence to them. Do you feel that there's lagers being made today in that quote unquote modern sense that have the potential for that potential, you know, longevity? to become the next, you know, Czech Pils, to become the next Helles, to become the next whatever.
Interesting. I don't know. I mean, I would like to be optimistic and say yes. Like, I think really characterful, interesting beer that's like the vision of somebody and that shows who they are and where they are from is compelling to me. But like, to use Jack's example of Riggs, like going to that brewery in Champaign-Urbana and like walking in and having it smell like tortilla chips while they're brewing this corn lager, and like talking to them about it and then tasting the beer that does not taste like tortilla chips but does taste like their beer. Like, do I want that to be universal and like the next big thing, or do I want that to be like, that's a taste of place for me? Like, I go there, I have that beer, and like, you're tasting like, I mean, generations of family farming in a glass, essentially, their raw materials. Whether or not, you know, it becomes the next big thing, like, I don't know. Kind of feel like I feel like lager itself is an opportunity for brewers to flex, in a sense, show off how technical and how their vision can come to life from, you know, imagination to glass, and that is special, and that the fact that it's different depending on who you talk to is itself special. So I don't know if I would identify a specific style as being like the next big thing. It would be hard for me to.
And I guess I don't necessarily mean like big thing, but becoming more established. But I guess to that point, and Joe, as you're talking, I sort of agree with, and Jack, I'm wondering, you know, from your standpoint, is small batch lager, is local lager, is lager from a place, like Joe was saying, is how important is that to modern lager, to where we are as drinkers and you as a beer maker these days?
I think that certainly there's an opportunity. I think craft lager is still very young and getting its footing right now. But I don't see any reason why the same sort of identities, local identities of ale brewers can't be applied to lager brewers as we move forward. And I don't know how much you've read about the book. We talk a lot about mashing and how we use raw materials to make lager. And I think one of the advantages to lager brewers, particularly those who are inclined to really be creative with their mashing regimens, is that you have a lot more opportunity to use local heritage ingredients. Often, I hope this doesn't come off wrong, but I've heard a lot of brewers talk about craft malt very negatively, saying they don't get the same yields, they don't get the same extracts, they're not sure how to use them. Now, if you take better mashing procedures to these sorts of ingredients, you can start to really develop the flavor, the character of your beer. And we hope to give the tools in order to do that in this book. So for a malt that's less modified, or an ingredient that isn't malted, or some other ingredient that has very high protein or very low this or very low that, or this interesting flavor, we can, as lager brewers who are used to adjusting mash temperatures, doing decoctions, we can really utilize these ingredients in ways that a single infusion brewer just won't be able to do, and produce beers that have very distinct character. Because the way the malting industry has gone, for better or worse, is to create very efficient, very consistent product every single time. And what does that mean is that most brewers use a very small selection of barley malt to produce their beers. And for that reason, there can be a lot of similarities between beers. And if you want to step outside of that and use a craft malt or use some sort of heritage ingredient, you're going to have to be a little bit more creative in how you use them in order to be able to actually process them through your brew house. So I think that gives a real opportunity for those who are willing to be creative and are willing to give the time in the brew house to use these ingredients.
Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
I was nodding along. I didn't think I just thinking to myself like about how what it's like to go to Munich and think about beer in the craft beer sense in Munich, where you know your options are going to be light and dark from six breweries across an entire city, compared to going a couple hours north to Bamberg and Franconia, and like every village has a different brewery making a different small beer that is a little different than the one down the way. And I don't know, that to me, that tent feels a little bit more like American craft beer and maybe American craft lager in the future, like, and shows some ability for us to grow into that.
That's awesome. And Jack, I'm glad you brought up the craft malting as well. Just because, I mean, I think there really is some cool stuff that's happening on that arena that really does bring, or has the potential to bring, some really fun flavors and that depth to, you know, to the glass. And, you know, I'm always appreciative when I'm seeing brewers that are embracing those operations, and then, you know, the maltsters responding in kind with, you know, committing to further crops and further years, and all of that. Starting to get mindful of your guys' time, I typically ask the Green Door question, but I'm going to turn it on its head just a little bit this time, because you did a lot of travel for this book, right? Did you keep track of like how many miles or how many countries or how many breweries you all visited during the writing of this book?
We should come up with the mileage. I know that it's over 100 breweries. I think something like 80 are end up being cited in the book. I don't know the mileage. Do you have a guess on that, Jack?
I try not to, and I have to think of the bills that we pay to do the traveling. But, you know, it's a lot. It's been an amazing experience. Every single brewer we go and we talk to, we learn something interesting. And then that's really provided for me an avenue to think about how to research that idea. So, you know, a brewer will talk about this little thing that they don't think is all that important. It's just something that they decided to bring up, and that it just clicked. I'm like, that's an interesting idea. I've never heard the other 50 brewers we talked to talk about. I need to look more into that and see if I can find some research about that. Cause it, you know, it's great to cite someone on their philosophy, but it's even more interesting when you can find the research paper that was written 3 years ago that actually covers it. And someone else had a similar idea and was able to prove that that's actually true. So a lot of the research we did was inspired by a lot of the conversations we had around the country and the world.
And it also sounds like that curiosity is preemptively starting to answer some of the questions that initially got you started on this book.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm just a very curious person. I love researching. I love finding the answers to these questions. So the more questions I have, the better. So, well, we're going to keep having these conversations as we go and hopefully continue to keep learning more about lager beer.
All right. So then the question, the Green Door-esque question for you two then is, of your travels, and I understand that you probably got access that most people wouldn't normally get, but I also imagine you sat in some beer gardens and you walked some fields and you sat in some tap rooms. What are, and I want to hear from each of you on this, what are two achievable lager drinking experiences or destinations that you uncovered during this book or experienced during this book that you would encourage folks listening to go seek out for themselves?
That's a good question, John.
All right. Well, while you think about it, I'll let Jack go first.
Yeah, I'm. Yes, please.
I think there's a lot of great places. It could really be anywhere.
No, come on. No cop-out answers here, man.
So I travel twice a year, and I don't have to go where I go, and I end up going there just because it's just sort of that ideal of a vlogger that I have, and it's generally plus or minus in Franconia. The thing I love about Franconia is that I learn something new every time. I always get a new beer. I'm always surprised by the diversity of lager beer, and it's just something that keeps me me going. Now, I am happy to go to Augustiner Beer Hall every single time. You know, I will get on a plane, spend a day in the beer hall, and come back the next day. But what really interests me is learning something new about lager, and I think Franconia might be the best place to do that.
All right, so you're going to prepare your second one, right? Because you said two, and I'll give you one
okay.
at the same time. So Zoigel beer, we write about a little bit in the book. One of our friends is actually doing an American Zoigel project right now. I think it's on tap at Fox Farm in Connecticut.
Yeah, Tom at Goldfinger launched that project, which is awesome.
So Zoigel beer, in short, communal brewery in the center of town. Each house uses the brewery, brings the beer back to their house, and is open one day a week. And so your experience going there is going to depend on what day you are there. We went to two. The one that sticks with me is Beim Glosser. I just remember the name of it, and I remember their like amber, interesting take on a fruity, totally, totally different lager beer than I've ever had. Probably one of the most memorable beers I think it was my second trip to Germany with on this book. I just think it's like, you know, you're walking into somebody's house that they literally open once a week. Now there's, I think twice a year you can go and they open all the houses on the same weekend. So maybe that's the experience of getting everything, but just like walking into someone's garden, sitting and like enjoying their hospitality and having their rustic lager, I think that's an awesome experience. And that was totally moving.
I like that. Jack, do you have another one in mind?
I probably could have got out of that, Joe, if you hadn't said I had to think of a second one.
That's true. I did call you out. I mean, I guess I'll stall on your behalf one more and say that, like, you know, yeah, it is maybe your local lager brewery at times is going to be the place that is very achievable for anyone to go out and like try the great lager beer from the brewery near them. I was just on a website, Lager Finder, the other day, and they're all around the country. But I don't know, one that sticks with me because of just the location. Freem and Hood River is just an awesome place that really like cares about trying to present lager in different lights, and it's just one of the more scenic places. So if you are local to that, that's a great place to have a lager beer.
Nice. Joe, any other thoughts?
That's me. That's what about you, Jack?
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I was stalling for him.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's so many great places. It's tough to pick one place, you know, in the U.S., but maybe if you head to Denver, you can get the best of both German brewing and Czech brewing between Bierstadt and Cohesion. So I thought that would sort of there's not so many breweries that are so specific as to how they execute their beers. And I really appreciate both the philosophies of those two breweries and how they stick to this very narrow window of their lager worlds and you know, produce some of the finest of those styles of beer. So I think that may be a good way if you want to learn more about German and or Czech beer to head to Denver.
I will never disagree with that. So the book is called Modern Lager Beer Techniques, Processes, and Recipes. It's available now. If you haven't gotten your copy already, you can pre-order it, and the Brewers publication says it'll be out by the end of the month or to you by the end of the month. The authors are Jack Hendler and Joe Connolly. Guys, thanks for doing this. Thanks. I mean, not only thanks for doing the podcast, but thanks for writing this book. And it's I learned a lot. And I've been really thinking about it for the last 48, 72 hours since I finished it. And I'm a big fan. So I hope everybody else gets it on their shelves and goes back and read it again and again and again. So,
well, thanks, John. I appreciate what you do here. And these interviews are always interesting. So thanks for thinking beer with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Hey, what's a lager experience you think everyone should be aware of? Tell me all about it. You can email me. It's John Hall, JohnHoll, at allaboutbeer.com. That's also how you can get in touch with questions, comments, or guest suggestions. Quick reminder to go visit allaboutbeer.com, where you can check out the podcast page, the merch page, read great new content, as well as peruse through our archives, which go all the way back to 1979. Follow All About Beer on social media at All About Beer. And if you're interested in supporting journalism in the beer space, and I hope you are, seriously, email us at info@allaboutbeer.com or go to patreon.com/allaboutbeer. One more time, All About Beer has that podcast channel now. Search and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Steal This Beer has new episodes every Monday. The BYO Nano podcast comes out on the 15th of every month. And check out probrewer.com each week for original articles from the All About Beer team. As for this show, Nate Schweber does the music, Jeff Quinn designed our logo, and I'm John Hall. New episodes release every Wednesday. And that's when I'll be back again to drink beer and to think beer.